Hello there, everyone. This is Crocodile Bob. Today, we're combing this whole area for a rare beast. There are only two in the world. They're fierce, and they'll stand the ground. And their carnivores have been known to attack man. This whole marsh area is where they thrive. Oh, wait. I see a couple of them now. Come on. Oh, and they're white. They're whiter than white. They're whiter than I imagined. What we're seeing here is two albino technorama. Feast your eyes on these folks. These are the rarest of the rare. I'm gonna move in real slowly. Quiet. Let's get a closer look. Wow. Look at those teeth. These babies are beautiful. Just take a look. Crikey! Crikey!
Welcome to Technorama. This is show number 78 for January 26, 2005. I'm your host, Chuck Tomasi. With me, as always, is the one and only Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm okay. And how are you today, Chuck?
I'm fine and feeling fine.
Okay.
We've got a lot of stuff in tonight's show, so let's get started. We got a quick interview with
His son,
Harrison. I'm on the ball tonight. And we've got a review of the Garmin Quest GPS. We've got lots of listener feedback. We've got an article about the MPAA doing the wrong thing, and much, much more. So, without further delay,
adieu.
Let us embark on this great adventure we call Technorama.
Oh, look, I see two of them up there.
Crikey!
On this day in tech history for January 26th, 2006. This is January 26th. It's the 26th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 339 days remaining. It was on this date in 1802 that the U.S. Congress passes an act calling for a library to be established within the U.S. Capitol. Eventually, this becomes the Library of Congress. Glenn H. Curtis flies the first successful seaplane on this date in 1911. Also on this date in 1962, Ranger 3 is launched to study the moon. The space probe later missed the moon by 22,000 miles. Just a wee bit outside. And on this date in 1983, Lotus 1-2-3 is released. Anyone remember that? Compaq buys Digital Equipment Corporation on this date in 1998. And XHTML 1.0 becomes a World Wide Web Consortium, or the W3C, recommendation on this date in 2000. Happy birthday goes out on this date in 1911 to the Nobel Prize winning physicist Polycarp Kush. I just like saying that name. And that's the way it was on this day in tech history for January 26th, 2006.
This is Mike Smith, host of the Mike Tech Show podcast at miketechshow.com. And you're listening to the Technorama podcast. Now, back to Chuck and Craig.
Welcome back.
Yes.
Are you there, Craig?
Yes, I'm here.
Earth to Craig. Let us jump right into listener feedback. We've got a ton of it. Starting with Mike Lingafelter, a.k.a. Lingo.
Lingo Star.
Currently in the chat room, or was a moment ago.
Is that Ringo's brother?
Lingo, Ringo, Bingo was his name, oh.
Yahtzee.
He writes, "Hi, all. I met my wife through a radio station." Oh, he's going back to our discussion about how we met our wives and the geeky things we did.
No more callers, please. We have a winner.
You're the third caller. Oh, didn't I win a pizza? No, you won a wife.
Damn.
You won it from a radio station, a computer date service. I did 3 dates and told my friend, "If this last one is the same as the others, I quit." Ooh, sounds like the others didn't go so well. We won't ask about those. They might be more interesting email. After that date, later that night, I told my friend, "She's the one! She's the one!" 2 months later, I asked her to marry me, and 2 months later, we were married! 1 year to the day my son Spencer was born. I told him that day, "Thanks. I'll never forget the day I got to marry your mother." Well, that makes it handy. My 10-year-old daughter was born the day after our anniversary, but I'm not one of those typical husbands. I do remember the day I was married. And 21 months later, we had a little girl, Rachel.
Cool.
November 26, 2005, my son turned 9. Well, congratulations. And at his party, we looked at each other and silently said, "Happy 10th anniversary." He looked at his son and said, "Happy anniversary?" My son turned 9, and at his party, we looked at each other and silently said, "Happy."
No, Chuck, use your imagination. You can figure it out.
You asked for it. That's how he closes the letter. Thanks for all the great shows, Lingo.
Hey, you know, earlier he mentioned 1 year to the day. My Spencer, I said, "Thanks." And I was thinking, you ever watched that Nanny 911?
I haven't watched that. Nope.
Well, at the beginning of it, there's this guy. This is such a harsh statement. This guy says it was none. He goes, "Hey, kid, I want my life back." I was like,
"Hey, kid."
He's talking to his son.
We've got a message from Yorga also. "Do you have any experience with the Jabra BT-800? That's a Bluetooth headset, and the answer is no. I have a Bluetooth phone, but I do not have a Jabra headset. I know there are some listeners out there who do have experience with the Jabra, and if you'd be so kind as to send an audio comment, tell us how you like it or don't, or whatever you want, and we'll pass that on to, you know, audio comment, email is fine also. We can read most of the time."
Yeah. Now, I've seen a lot of people walking around with a Bluetooth earpieces. I had a friend that's got a Palm Trio, and he's got one of those little things on there. He's got a phone call. You just hit the button on it, and he's talking away.
They're handy. Cool. They make you look kind of Borgish, but they're handy.
I'm made of tin.
And our last listener feedback is
from... Chuck.
Yes, yes, yes.
I am 8 of 10. I am 8 of 10.
I already told you, I'm 6 of 9. There are 9 kids in my family. I'm number 6.
Resistance is futile.
My younger sister is 7 of 9. Our final one is from a voicemail from Eric Larson about Craig's eBay incident that we talked about. And Craig has a follow-on comment to this. So,
yes, I do.
Tell us, oh, wise sage Eric Larson, what have you found?
Hey, guys, it's Eric Larson of EricCast.com fame. But I'm not famous. But anyway, I was just listening to Craig's little eBay trauma, debacle, whatever you want to call it. Being something of an eBay guy, back having started in 1996 when eBay was just this little holding company type thing. And the cool part about it was this thing called Auction Web Auction. So yeah, that's why your emails from eBay have AW in them. It was all the way back to when it wasn't eBay; it was Auction Web on eBay. Anyway, I digress. My wife is the way major eBay person. And yet we have not had an experience like that. But I thought that once eBay bought PayPal and everyone bought everyone else and they all got together for the big, you know, warm fuzzy group hug thing, that there was supposed to be a bunch of buyer protection deal stuff in there that that you weren't, you know, going to be burned to the tune of $60. Now, since I'm driving at the moment, it's a little bit hard to pull out the laptop and get a non-existent wireless connection to look this up for myself. But is there something like that? Do you have any hope of getting a little PayPal payback there or not? Are you truly up the creek? Or is it one of those things where if you want to file 87 forms in triplicate, you could do it, but it's just not worth it? Or just kind of wondering. And if you could figure that out, then, hey, you know, Chuck Chat Technorama can spread the word on how to get money back from fraudulent eBay people. So hope it works out, and that one way or another you get the components you need. But, yeah, is there any remediation through PayPal or eBay? Let us know. And, hey, keep up the good work. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you, Eric. And yes. Craig, your rebuttal?
My rebuttal. Well, that's not a debate. But what the deal is the other day I was going to go and file a claim against this guy through eBay. I thought I'd at least try something. Well, I got an email from
Mark at Memphis.
Yeah. Mark around Memphis. And he actually told me that if you paid with PayPal, go to PayPal and they have a resource center. What did I call that? It's not a resource center, but anyway, they got a place where you can file a claim. You file the claim, and they have all your payment information already in there. You give it a good description of what happened from your side. They will try and contact the seller. If the seller does not rebut within 10 days, I get my money back. So I was very – it's a resolution center. That's what it was.
And you're currently on day what?
I'm on day 9, so I'm now, after 10 days, I get it back. So I'm on day 9, so until that happens, I'm going to start the official countdown, and I'm going to report each day.
You know, like register a domain, craigsebaygripes.com or something, and just have a big number there?
Days Craig's till I Resolution get my Center report. No, so, yeah, the deal, it's pretty cool. The deal is, like I said, you fill out a report, and they got 10 days to respond. If they do respond, then they have a mediator that looks at both sides and they settle the dispute. But if they don't respond in 10 days, they fine for the buyer.
Excellent.
It's very cool. So, looking forward to that.
There's anyway. The news, bird. The flying in. We need a news mascot or something.
Yeah.
You found a very interesting article about the MPAA.
Yeah, this has been floating around a good bit. It's probably got enough air on it that everybody's probably heard it by now. But the MPAA is accused of copying movies. And the movie they're accused of copying is none other than an independent film called This Film Is Not Yet Rated.
How appropriate.
This film, yeah. And yeah, no kidding. Well, this film is actually taking a critical view of the MPAA and how they rate major motion pictures as opposed to independent films when it comes to giving them a rating on the film. Well, like I said, it is critical of the MPAA, and because it is implicating some of the MPAA's employees, they decided to make copies of it and pass it around. Now, the director of the film, the guy that owns the film, he specifically told the MPAA not to make any copies of it. However, they can view it for a rating. And they did give it an NC-17 because of some sexual content.
Oh, man.
However, they copied it, which is kind of funny.
Sue them, get your money.
I just thought it was ironic. You know, there's so many people for copying movies on the internet. Not that I'm advocating that, but then they do the same thing. You think anything's going to happen to them?
But they mentioned us, so we had to make a copy and make sure it was okay. We're not going to give it away to our friends or nothing or put it on BitTorrent, because that would be wrong and it wouldn't work.
Well, I just think it's funny that they're not held by the same, you know, rules that other people are held to when it comes to movies and copyright and whatnot. So.
Sue them.
Yeah, sue them out of existence. But wait. Anyway, on to our hacks and strange stories tonight.
Wait, we were supposed to have a sweeper in there.
Oh, let's back up.
Hi, this is Tom Dutchick from Immersion Presents. You're listening to Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
That puts me in the proper frame of mind now. Hacks and strange stories. Okay.
Wait a minute, we're backing up.
No smoke marijuana. Here's your school. Okay, you found a full motion video on an 8088. These people took an 8088 computer, an old IBM 4.77 megahertz PC with CGA graphics, and did full motion video on it.
Yes, they did. I was very impressed. Did you watch the video?
I did. It was impressive. It was a little choppy. I mean, in today's standards, it looked like a pile of crap. But
yeah. Blocky? Yes, but it works.
It works. If somebody had showed you that in like 1985, you would have just been blown away.
Whoa, check that out. Look at those graphics. There'll never be anything better than that.
They had a section of Tron. You could see them doing the light cycles thing. Yeah. They had somebody dancing. They had some large block letters moving across the screen. And it was impressive. It was impressive.
I think if I remember the article right, the guy said it started off as a kind of like a dare, as a joke in the office that, oh, there's no way you can make an 88E do that kind of graphics. I mean, he did it.
Geek challenge.
Oh, you're challenging my geekness?
There's a lot more power in those processors than Microsoft gave them credit for.
Yeah, right.
Our next story, Harry Porter's relay computer. I just love saying that name. It's not Harry Potter. It's Harry Porter. If you've got a million relays lying around, you know, the old clickety-clackety relay.
Relayus computerus.
Not internet relay chat or frame relay circuits. It's the relay computer. And this guy made a big computer that was probably is the size of the wall I'm staring at, which is about 8 feet by 16 or 14 feet. Big computer. And it was all nicely labeled. You could see where the memory was and the CPU. And it was pretty slick.
If I'm not mistaken, I think it was non-volatile as well. So the power went out.
It was SRAM. Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm.
Which is more expensive. Lots of good pictures. We'll have a link in the show note. This is just one of those things that you see and you go, oh my gosh, it's Technorama fodder.
Yeah. Just when you think we're geek enough, somebody else outdoes us. So.
Want to give a quick shout out to the people in the chat room. We've got Mad Marv, jeepanddave.com. Who goes into a chat room with a .com on there?
Shameless plug.
Glenn, Mark Shepard, of course, Tim Elliott, Joni is back. Hey, Joni. Mr. Gadgets, a.k.a. Juice Bar, and Daniel, welcome to those in the chat room. If you're around at the right time and you happen to see a gaggle of geeks, do geeks travel in gaggles, or what would be the appropriate?
Flocks.
Herd?
I don't know.
We're going to have to come up with one. Somebody send us a email, audio clip, something. Tell us the official group of geeks term. And then we'll have to have, what is a male geek, a female geek, and a baby geek called?
I'm gonna have to try a Google search while we're doing the show.
Geekling.
Geekling.
Geeklings. Burn you will.
Tasty.
Too much fun. All right. Give us the lead into this next interview.
Yes. This is a highly respected individual from the science and, technology field. Actually,
took weeks to line this up.
It's my son, and I thought we were goofing around. He kept wanting to talk into my microphone. I was like, well, you know what? How about let's do an interview? So here we go. I did a little quick little interview with my son.
All right. What's your name?
Harrison.
Harrison what?
Harrison Nicholson.
Okay. What's your favorite color?
Green.
Green. Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. And how old are you?
3.
Yep. How old are you going to be?
In March?
Yep.
5.
Close.
3. 4!
That's right. So, what's some cartoons that you like?
Scooby-Doo.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah!
And what else?
Superheroes.
I like Fairly Odd Parents.
Chad! That's my favorite, too.
Okay. And Jimmy Neutron?
Yeah.
He's pretty cool sometimes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. What else do we like? Oh no.
We like Timmy's Godparents.
Yeah, those are good. Let's see. Do you like space stuff? Like, what's in space that you like?
Aliens and astronauts I like in outer space.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Do you like Star Wars?
Yeah.
Tell me about Star Wars.
I'm the good guys fight with lightsabers with Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. And you got Jedis, too, right? Jedis? We like the Jedis.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the Jedi toys.
No, we'll have to work on that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, tell everybody bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Later.
This is Lance Heath from the Digital Experience Podcast, and you're listening to Chuck and Craig from Technorama.
And now back to the news desk.
And to you, Lance.
Lance, I want to know where you got that music. That is awesome.
And now Lance with the weather. It's the internet. It's dark and partly cloudy. No, sorry.
Our second interview for the evening is our... I talked to my coworker Steve again. He's the one who gave us the
This is more of a GPS inter-review.
That's right. It's a review. We've got news, no, reviews, and interviews. And this is the other
inter-review. Inter-review.
Where you get the inter?
You're talking to him, and he's reviewing a product.
I just asked him questions about the product. Okay.
Come on, man. Just go with it.
Inter-review. Is that like inter-renet?
Inter-renets.
Inter-renets. Never mind. Inter-web. On with it. We've got a show to do. Steve is here with another GPS review. Which one you got this time?
Garmin Quest. This is my own personal model.
Garmin is like the name right now, at least in the U.S.
The most popular U.S. Consumer-grade GPS unit.
Okay, which model did you say?
The Quest.
Quest.
Quest is their midline model.
Okay.
In the range, they have quite a variety. This is more of a navigation tool, not like Chad had with the Explorers, which is more of a...
this is basically a car model.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, whereas Chad had a handheld model.
And the differences between the two when you look at them is just going to be pretty obvious. The handhelds are meant to fit in your hand, so they run north and south when you look at the display,
yep.
Whereas the Quest runs east and west. It's more of a thing to go on your dash. Mm-hmm. It's the Quest has a color screen. It's not touchscreen, similar to the Magellan model that Chad had. It's got buttons to navigate around, where the TomTom was all touchscreen.
Mm-hmm.
It has its own internal battery. It takes about 4 hours to charge and will run 20 hours on it. The screen is backlit. It does have anti-glare screen, so you can use it out in the sunlight, and you can still view it in bright sunlight. And I've had it in direct sunlight and was able to see it.
That's a pretty important feature these days.
Yes,
it is. Especially wants to see them outside.
Especially if you're using it outside, yes.
Yeah.
In a car, that's one thing you got to look at. It looks good in the store or something like that. See if you can get it outside in the sunlight and see if it washes out at
good
all.
Good tip.
Yep.
Good tip.
And the anti-glare on there is probably one of the better ones out there that I've seen. I haven't had a chance to see the Magellan out in the...
How about connectivity? USB?
USB, same. USB.
Any expandability in there?
Nope, this one has hard-coded... It's got a 115-meg chip.
Okay.
Now, they did come out with the Quest 2, which is the same form factor,
uh-huh.
But they added more memory. And with the Quest, just the plain Quest, you have to load in detail maps, and you have 115-meg of memory to work with to get your detail maps in there, the areas that you need. And then your routes also. For a point of reference, I made a trip to California from Wisconsin. I was able to get detailed maps along my entire route, which was the main highways out to the western part of the states, all the way around out to the coast, down through San Francisco, back through Denver, in 114.7 meg. So you can get a lot.
Squeezing it in there.
I've loaded detailed maps for the entire state of Wisconsin, the entire state of Michigan, and Illinois, including Chicago, with about 110 meg. So just to give you an idea of what kind of memory eats up. When you move to the Quest 2 model, what they did is preloaded all those maps for you.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, they gave you an additional 140 meg. So you can load topographical information for fishing or any other maps that you need to load into memory. So besides having all the maps loaded, it gives you an additional memory to load extra options.
Does that one have any expandability?
No.
Or is it just kind of a Garmin thing that they don't give you SD cards?
Some models.
Okay. Usually the higher-end ones?
Higher-end models, like the 2600 series or the 2000 series, you should say, they will. Some of those come with an internal hard drive, or they do have the SD RAM that you put in. No, I think it's just regular flash memory.
Is the internal hard drive robust enough to take on a motorcycle trip?
No, that's why they say get the ones with the cards.
Okay.
I would suggest that anyways, just because you can buy them with 512 and go out and buy an actual card. It's the bigger form factor, whatever that size is.
Compact flash.
It's compact, yeah.
What are your likes and dislikes about the Quest?
The dislikes, the size of the buttons is hard to do with gloves on the motorcycle. Okay. It's kind of hard to navigate around. Trying to think. It's some of the intuitiveness of its map source program, which goes along as the adder that you put on your PC to plan routes.
Mm-hmm.
That program needs some work as far as doing route planning like I would on the motorcycle. If somebody's going somewhere in their car and wants to plan a route, that's good, but I use it for the fact that the route is my trip and I want to do certain things, and it's limited anyways, but the unit itself can't be faulted in that. That's the company software. The likes, the size is good. It's very compact. It's about a little bit bigger than your cell phone, so you can put it in your shirt pocket. The display is still big. It's almost 2.5 inches across, so it is visible. It's very visible. If you're out riding, you have to glance down. You can pick up objects. It is color, so you're able to see.
Sure.
It's got cool stuff like it's got a day-night mode. It automatically switches. It knows the time of day mm-hmm. and when sunset is, and it'll switch to a night mode to make it easier to see at night.
Oh, nice.
You know, less bright
yep.
colors. It's all, you know, dark tones. Trying to think what else. Oh, it's a very good, it's got auto routing on it. So if you plan your route, it knows how to, if you load the features in, which take more memory, it will auto route you if you need to get around something. So it's a good unit for the size wise and the power that you get, whereas the larger units with the same power are a little bit bigger form factor and harder to be, you know, move between car and car and take with you and such like that.
Garmin Quest, what's the street price?
Right now, I think you can get them for around $300, $350.
Okay.
The Quest 2 is going to be up around $500 to $600.
Newer model.
Yeah, well, that's the one with all the stuff in it. Just remember, they both have the same name, but the 2 at the end means you're getting all the preloaded maps and the extra memory on there.
Okay. Hey, thanks.
Yep.
Whatever, this is Eric from The Eric Rice Show, and you're listening to Technorama.
Well, there you go, the Garmin Quest from my coworker Steve.
Yeah.
And moving right along, let's jump right into part or a second to a last, our penultimate. That's
what?
Big word I learned. Penultimate episode of How to Destroy the Earth. This one's number two as we count down.
You're using a word like that, and I can't use interview.
That's not a word.
Screw you, man.
Take my microphone and go to him.
That's right.
We had a special guest sitting on this one, and the last one will also be done by a guest also. So without further delay, here we go. How to Destroy the Earth, number two.
What the chuck?
What's up with that?
Hello, this is Lenny. I'd like to bring you number two as we count down to number one in our 10 ways to destroy the Earth. This one's entitled, Eaten by Von Neumann Machines. What you're gonna need for this one is a single Von Neumann machine. The method for this one's a little strange. A von Neumann machine is any device that is capable of creating an exact copy of itself by nothing but the necessary raw materials. Create one of these that subsists almost entirely of iron, magnesium, aluminum, and silicon, the major element found in Earth's mantle and core. It doesn't matter how big it is as long as it can reproduce itself exactly in any period of time. Release it into the ground under the Earth's crust and allow it to fend for itself. Watch and wait as it creates a second von Neumann machine. Then they create two more. Then they create four more. As the population of the machine doubles repeatedly, the planet Earth will, terrifyingly soon, be entirely eaten up and turned into a swarm of potentially sextillions of machines. Technically, your objective would now be complete. No more Earth. But if you want to be thorough, then you can command your VNM to hurl themselves along with any remaining trace elements into the sun. This hurling would have to be achieved using rocket propulsion of some sort, so be sure to include that in your design. This one's just so crazy, it just might work. Her Earth's final resting place after all this. The bodies of the V&M themselves, then a small lump of iron that sinks into the sun. The earliest feasible completion date for this would be potentially 2045 to 2050, or even earlier. Well, here you go. Thanks for listening. 101.
Will you marry me?
No, I can't do this.
That's my favorite part.
We are happy that we are married now.
No. No.
It's on the internet now. You're done. Hey, if you're wondering where I was last on the last show, I was in the I was downhill skiing, and one of the things I had with me,
breaking leg, Chuck.
No, well, I had a little plastic bone pinned to my jacket. And everybody goes, "What's that bone for?" That's the one I break. I had a Griffin IFM with me, which is a remote control you can use on your lapel to control your iPod. Works great, connects right to the dock connector. And the good folks at Griffin also sent us some other stuff. One of the things we're giving away. Hey, what?
You're walking around with your lapel hanging out?
I was walking around with it's clipped to my lapel on the cuff of my neck thing on the jacket.
Okay.
All right. Griffin sent us a box of good stuff. And we have our first item to give away. We will be giving this away. All you have to do is send an email to ChuckChat plus Road Trip. This is a Griffin Road Trip. ChuckChat plus Road Trip at gmail.com. And we'll draw a random name from the Road Trip contestants. If you want the Road Trip, let me describe this. This is good for any iPod with a dock connector. So it's third generation, fourth generation video iPod and Nano. And plugs into your cigarette lighter, has a nice little cradle unit. And if you're not using it in your car, you can detach the FM transmitter part of it and use it on your computer. There's a USB cable, plugs in. Now your computer can be a little FM transmitter.
Oh, that rocks.
That's pretty cool. And it's got lots of different extensions and adapters, so you can have it ride high or ride low or stick in and out, and it goes all over the place. Nice little toy. We are giving one away from the good folks at Griffin. All you have to do is send email to ChuckChat plus Road Trip, RoadTrip at gmail.com, and we will draw a name on the show we do on
the 15th.
We'll give you
February 15th.
3 weeks from the time this is recorded, we will
be
drawing.
No cheating, you can't use this for a Valentine's present.
We will not be putting this in the show notes, and we may be running multiples at the same time. So make sure you send it to ChuckChat plus Roadtrip at gmail.com, and we will be happy to give one to you. One word of caution, if you live in cold climates, don't leave this out in the cold, because the FM transmitter does not work well when it gets below 50 degrees, maybe even 60.
I think Chuck has that same problem.
I don't work good.
It doesn't work until you get in about 60 or 70 degrees.
All right, we've got to rip through our geek library. Craig found us about four things. First one is Firebug for Firefox.
Yes, the first thing, if you are a web developer, you need to install this. It's I'll read you the quick description off the website. This Firebug is a new tool for Firefox that aids in the debugging JavaScript, DHTML, and AJAX. It is like a combination of JavaScript console and DOM inspector with a command line JavaScript interpreter. It is very cool. I was able to turn on there's a little part of it that you can turn on called the inspect element. And when you do that, you'll see these nice highlights all over as you mouse over. And when you click on one, it'll give you all the information in a lower window about what is in there, the CSS, the box, and the JavaScript that's affecting it. Very nice, very useful if you're a web developer at all.
If you're a web developer, you're probably already using Firefox. This would be a good tool in your arsenal.
Yeah, the web developer toolbar is very nice, but this adds something a little more useful.
Next article.
Now, the next article is the put NextP on your thumb drive, and there's a step-by-step and thing to do it over at Information Week, a whole article. There's four pages to explain how to do this. I have not read through this, and I haven't done it myself, so I can't give you any specifics, Chuck. But so, anyway, it's a very good read, and from when I flipped through, it looked interesting. That's why I threw it in the geek library. And the next thing is Lin Clips.
Lin Clips?
It's screencasts of Linux distros in action. And it's not actually demonstrating how you use Linux to do this or that or the other. Instead of having like an OSDIR, OSDIR, or however you say it, they have screenshots all over the place. Well, this is similar, where you view the little screencast. It's a flash, not animation, but a flash video. And as you're watching it, they flip through the application to kind of show you what it looks like, because you know all these Linux distros has a similar but different look and feel, and you can get an idea of what it looks like and what the applications look like and the versions and all that good
stuff. Well, that's handy, because I want to know the different, how this one, sure. What's the difference between Ubuntu and Red Hat, and there's so many out there, you just have to have a good reference to see
now,
that.
Now, this is for the, it's like a screencast of the desktop, so it may not give you all the technical, behind the scenes. It's to show you what the apps look like and how everything kind of looks.
Cool. And our final one, the top 10 reasons why geeks make good fathers.
And see, we can attest that, can't we, Chuck?
I'm got my kids in training right now.
All right, geeks make good fathers, man.
You're
the father.
I know, but I'm training them to be good geeks, too.
Okay, I see where you're going with that.
We won't read through all of these. We'll just go through a couple of the highlights. Number one?
Legos.
Legos are good.
Yes, I can go with that one.
The geek is really more of a man-child than an adult. Okay, we'll go on from there. Number two, video games.
Due to the whole man-child thing, stated number one, the geek loves video games. And yes, I can attest to that, too.
Number three, math. A huge plus here.
Yeah, that's you, Chuck. You're the math man.
I'm working on it. My daughter is rapidly outpacing my age skill. As her knowledge increases, mine decreases at twice the rate. It's kind of like uranium.
I can attest to that. Your brain has a half-life.
That's right. I play Half-Life a little different than everybody else. I get to 70 and I'll just be going,
let's hurry up and get to the show before you're a vegetable.
101.
Anyway, number four, smart kids. Smart geeks make smart children.
That's usually true.
Yeah, you can refer to my interview earlier. And number five, up on technology. The beautiful thing about having a geek for a parent is that you aren't wondering what your child is doing online. You just sit there and you can just capture their packets and you figure it out yourself.
Number six, or, science fair projects. Yeah.
Or if you're like Chuck, you can just fish for information for your child.
That's
during
right.
Christmas.
Hey, it's all about the technology, man.
Yeah.
Number six, science fair projects. Children of the geeks always have the coolest science fair projects. That's right. Number six, toy assembly. You will never
Number
ever.
Seven.
What did I say? Six? Seven. Yeah. Toy assembly. You will never ever have to spend 6 hours of your life that you will never get back trying to assemble some 2,000-piece toy at 3 a.m. on Christmas Eve again.
So let's go ahead and finish these out, Chuck.
Number eight, gadgets. Mm-hmm. Need I say more? Number nine, smart is cool. Having a geek for a father instills the message into your children that smart is cool.
That's right. And number 10, being idolized is good for your geek.
Of course, you have to be careful that his head isn't getting too big. And with that, we will leave this show and release you into the podosphere as we do every other show.
Fly, be free.
Give him the stuff, man.
Okay. Well, guys, listen up. Now it's your turn. You can call a listener line at 206-222-CHAT. That's 2428. You can email Chuck at chuck@chuckchat.com. You can send audio comments to chuckchat@gmail.com. And, of course, you can email me and inflate my ego, since I'm famous. Isn't that right, Chuck?
You are famous.
Yeah, right.
I want to see your name in those iTunes notes.
I tried to use it at a restaurant, and they were like, who the hell are you? Anyway, you can email me at kreg@chuckchat.com. And as always, constant in the universe, you can go find everything at chuckchat.com, our show notes, forum, swag, webcam, all that good stuff.
As always, thank you for listening. Take care and have a binary high five.
101.
Take care, everybody.
I am your father.
Hey, can you say 101?
102T.
No, say 101.
101.